KPCA LP Petaluma, California.
That's good. I mean, one of these Fridays when we say sad Friday, that will not be a good day.
That's true.
So let's keep it happy, folks.
That's right. So what's going on with all of you people?
What's not going on?
I don't know.
This is like the busiest time of the year for, I think, a lot of people.
It's my favorite time of the year.
It's really funny. It's supposed to be all, I think it's supposed to be all about joy and love and all that great stuff. But for me, for the past probably, I don't know, maybe my career, working career, it's just been a lot of stress, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Did you end up putting a tree up, Jason?
My wife took care of it yesterday.
Oh, good.
No, yeah, my wife.
I know
son.
How you feel about that.
About what?
About the whole Christmas thing.
Oh, we do trees every year.
Do you?
Yeah, I grew up with Christmas.
Oh, okay.
But I mean,
you just don't still embrace that.
No. What it is I'm not religious.
I know.
I'm not a believer in deities, which is the actual definition of an atheist. That doesn't mean I'm against that because I don't believe in it. But we always celebrated Christmas, which of course has pagan roots. We didn't celebrate it in that way, but it was Santa Claus and presents and getting together and all that. But I measured the chimney one day and stopped believing in Santa Claus and, you know.
Measured the chimney?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could tell there's no way he was going to fit down.
I realized
there were other explanations for why the eggnog had been drunk and the cookies were eaten.
And
put two and two together with critical thinking and
wow.
Grew up and no longer believe in Santa Claus. And, yeah, so for me, it's not a religious thing. It's more of just a, a good time to celebrate the seasons. And, I mean, really, if we go back far enough, the whole reason for the season is the 23-degree tilt of the Earth's axis. That's why we have the seasons. That's why all these rituals occurred, because we didn't know it back then. You know, are we going to get daylight again?
Yeah,
or is the
weather
going to go away? Anyway.
Janice, you might have a dog story.
Actually, I do have a Coco story. Last week, I left Coco at home in the garage, so I put her bed in the garage, and then I opened up the side door so she could go out, and my neighbor said she cried for 2 hours, and she's just not used to being home by herself, and so I sat her down and had a talk with her about why you can't cry when we're, when we have to leave you home, so we decided we'll just take her with us.
Well, there you go.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's good.
My parenting skills have always been neglectful.
Well,
so.
To be a politician, that stands to reason.
Oh, maybe. So that's my only Coco story.
Yeah.
Except that my dog was not supposed to be a shedder.
Oh.
And you know what? That's why she was the bargain dog out of the litter. She is a shedder. She's a fluffer. And
yeah.
So I have to brush her every day.
Lots of vacuuming.
Lots of vacuuming and lots of brushing.
But it's hair. It's not fur, so it's different.
Well, that's true. You can walk around and scoop it up in your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But, I still love Coco. She's a wonderful dog.
Yeah.
Coco the Wonder Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my Coco story for the week.
All right.
So I was actually at the city council meeting on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting meeting. I got up and spoke at public comment, and I talked about the fact that I had met with Supervisor David Rabbit, and we talked about the Corona overcrossing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know about retrofitting, because in the past, the city staff has always said, oh, it's been retrofitted.
Yeah.
Well, we know it hasn't been,
yeah.
Because we all know what it looks like when they used to retrofit old overcrossings.
Mm-hmm.
And he said there's like 3 pieces of rebarb chipping through the cement.
Yeah.
Which tells me that this is why the gas tax and the vehicle license fee was for crumbling bridges and roads.
Oh.
And Corona is not on any list to be redone. So I'm going to do a Public Record Act request with Caltrans.
Mm-hmm.
I've already asked the city and Sonoma County Transportation Authority on updates, and I want to see the last time that they inspected it, which I know is 2018. And that's when I found out there's these cracks in the rebar coming through the cement. And so, and it was built in 1956, this is the worst part of politics.
You're the only one discovering this? No one at the city level knows about the cracks? I mean, what would the city do without Janice?
You don't want to ask for.
But you know what's funny? I was going through my dad's old paperwork, uh-huh. and my dad was very active politically also. Yeah. We're kind of on different sides, but we have some of the same tact. Sure. And so he writes this letter, and it was about something happening at the airport because he had a plane. Mm-hmm. And so somebody accused him of having somebody else come and work on his plane. Mm-hmm. And you weren't allowed to do this. And this is like back in the 1990s, I think. And so I just found this letter. And so I'm reading this letter. And my dad was very clear and let the city council and city attorney and Gene Beatty, who worked for the city, let them know that this is not what's happened. And then he got this other guy to write a letter saying, no, that's not what happened. But at the end, he did something that seems like a typical Janice. I know where I get this from. He wrote about how there were firefighters in Marin County that went to a fire in Marin County, uh-huh. and they had taken World War II memorabilia.
Oh.
And he ended it with that. And I'm not really sure why he tied that together.
Wow.
But it was interesting to go back and read old political papers in Petaluma and the connections.
Yeah, it's interesting history.
But, you know, we've been talking about this, the parking rule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that was discussed last week, some city council meeting. And so it looks like they're going to be making some changes to motorhomes and boats, anything mm-hmm. that doesn't really move.
Got a survey about it.
Right.
Yeah, I did, too.
And it was kind of a funky survey, though, because you had to really understand what some of the issues were, I thought.
Yeah.
But I thought Lieutenant Miller did a really good job of doing the presentation. It's the mm-hmm. first time I ever heard him do a presentation. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a good presentation. I'm worried that there might be things that you really don't see what other problems could happen by mm-hmm. making certain changes.
Yeah.
But we're moving forward, and so that's really positive. And I just really want to thank the police department and Peggy Flynn for pulling this forward, because it's been a long battle. Yeah. And so we'll see what happens, but it's a good thing.
Well, not to get into the big topic, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, just in terms of covering top news items, I just went to Petaluma 360, and the story that's right on the front there is the Petaluma Art Board
right.
make that bathtub project hold up. So I guess there's just mm-hmm. some disappointment by the committee that there's going to have to be, because there's going to have to be an EIR.
Well, I think they decided to do an EIR, and it sounds like they really didn't discuss it. They kind of bypassed the committee, and they're just going to go ahead and move forward with this EIR. Yeah. And what concerns me most is when it comes to any type of art, whether it's music, when the public starts determining or government starts determining art, that's frightening.
Because on the expense of it.
Well,
the expense for no
particular
reason.
The EIR is not free.
No.
Yeah,
and they're taking it out of the art fund.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's
sad.
Yeah,
I guess the concern was the way the historic district was modified or something. That's what the I guess there was a threat of a lawsuit.
There's a threat of a lawsuit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and so this is a precursor to anything that's going to happen. Yeah. If you can get enough money together, you can go ahead and hire this law firm in Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate.
Yeah. Anyway, it continues.
Do either of you know what's going on with all there's a big traffic study going on. Have you seen they've got the tickers laid out on all the roads?
I don't know.
Light timing?
No, I think it's just counting.
Car trips.
Yeah. Because it's in different areas in town, and I think that's something.
It's everywhere.
Well, what I will do today, I'll go ahead and write in the last one.
But I guess what I meant to say is that for, because I remember that one of the things that was being looked at is changing the timing of the stoplights. Is that how they determine
that?
Yeah,
this is in areas where there's not even any lights.
Okay.
No.
But then, you know, I think about it, it's near a lot of railroad crossings, too.
Huh.
I saw one at Corona, and then there was another one I saw, and I can't remember where it was.
I'll have to look into that.
But I'm not sure if it's... Oh, you know what? It was over on Caulfield by Cots.
Yeah.
That's where I saw the second one. And I'm sure there's more of them around. I'll email.
It might be for the traffic.
I'll email the city and ask.
We had a bunch of disturbing alerts when my son was in school that there was a lockdown.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be, I guess, an overreaction?
Well,
it sounded like.
I don't think you take anything as an overreaction.
Yeah.
When you had a Jewish preschool across the street.
Yeah, yeah.
You had a junior high, a high school, and a grammar school close by. And I don't think you should second guess in case something is really
real.
Yeah, I know it's a tricky one because if you don't do that and something happens, of course that's terrible.
Right.
If you do call the alarm and it doesn't turn out, the problem with that, of course, it's like the boy who cried wolf. At a certain point, people don't take them seriously. But I don't know what you got to have to do what you got to do.
The other thing is when you start reading these Facebook posts of what people are giving information out, but you're not really getting information from the city or the police department who should be really disseminating the information.
Right.
It's going through these other channels, and there seems to be a lot of confusion because something also happened, and the living wage in 2020, January, is starting, January 2020. So Petaluma will be officially a living wage community.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not sure. I tried to get these documents, but they were trying to
postpone it.
Yeah.
Who did that?
I don't know who did it. I went to City Hall yesterday asking for the documents. I went to the city attorney's office, and I couldn't seem to get any documents or any names. Was it a group, a business group in town? Who signed this? I want to see the letter. And I couldn't get the letter.
And they're being very close-lipped. And even Kevin McDonald had a post on Insight or Petaluma Tomorrow.
Yeah.
You and I belong to a group called we did.
Yeah.
Anyway, Petaluma Tomorrow has a listserv where conversations go on. And Kevin did chime in. And he said that it's going to be postponed, that it's not going – there is no – the rumor of an emergency meeting is only that, a rumor. Right.
Well,
now.
No, it ended, but what was disturbing is on another Facebook post, which was the North Bay Organizing Group, they're marking like, oh, no, we've talked to Mike Healy already, and he says there's not enough votes. And so then I wrote and I said, does anybody understand what a Brown Act violation is?
Yeah.
Because that's how you get a serial meeting going.
Yeah.
And so this is what happens when rumors start, and I'm not really sure what happened, but it sounded like the city attorney may have taken the lead in this. And so the public really understands the city council has three employees, city manager, city attorney, and the city clerk.
Mm-hmm.
The city clerk is the keeper of documents. And it's really important when anybody sends a letter to the city, if they do it to a city council member or a department, that they always copy the city clerk because that is the keeper of documents.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting how rumors start, but I'm looking forward to 2020 and the living wage is not going to be a reverse.
Yeah. And I want to recognize our city clerk, Claire Cooper.
Yes.
Does a great job.
She does.
You know, we should have Claire on because she's going to be retiring in August.
Oh, yeah. That was
great. Yeah.
Would the city allow her to be on, do you think?
You know what? I'll bet you they would. You know, I'll ask Claire. I'll email her and ask if she'll come because they don't work on Fridays.
Yeah.
But people don't really know what a city clerk does. What is their job? What's their background?
Yeah.
And it's quite a very important position in any city, and people don't even realize it.
She has a lot of balls in the air.
Oh.
There's a...
Juggling.
Oh, no, I got that right.
It's the fifth annual Grand Menorah lighting is happening on Sunday.
Yeah.
That sounds very cool.
That should be fun. I've never been to one.
Yeah.
Except for my own house.
Okay, enough about us and what we want to talk about.
Okay.
We have a guest.
We do.
Yeah. Our guest today is Ed Perlstein. He is a music photographer and a radio programmer right here at KPCA 103.3 FM. Good morning, Ed. Thank you for being here with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And you are a local resident, just so folks know.
I am. I've been living in Petaluma for over 30 years.
Yeah, with your wife, Jean.
My wife, Jean. Our kids are grown and moved out, but my daughter grew up here. My son partially grew up here. And my daughter did 4 years at Casa Grande. So we're entrenched in the community, and we love it.
And how old are your children?
My daughter's my daughter's 36. My son is older.
Okay.
I won't say.
I know. Scary.
Yeah.
My oldest is going to be 42 this year.
Yeah. So, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get started in the photography business?
Well, I've always been a music lover. So I grew up on the East Coast. Started going to concerts as soon as I could. First concert was Cream, 1968.
Oh, wow.
God.
I saw everybody from Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, wow. Early Rolling Stones.
Wow.
Grew up going to concerts at the Fillmore East under Bill Graham. So I realized early on that the music I liked, a lot of it was in San Francisco. Grateful Dead, Jefferson Airplane, Quicksilver Messenger Service. And so I realized San Francisco was the center of the universe for me, musically. And when I was, 19, I moved out here. And that was in 1972. And then I kind of weaseled my way or entrenched my way into the music community. Went to a lot of shows. Everything was very loose back then. Mm-hmm. So I would, you'd go to a Jerry Garcia and Merle Saunders show at a club or something like that.
For $5.
For $3.
Yeah.
And they'd be around after, talking, just hanging out.
Uh-huh.
You can talk to them. It was very loose.
And they allowed you to take pictures.
Well, that came a little later.
Okay.
What came first is my interest early on, even before that, of collecting live concert recordings. And this started out with the Grateful Dead. It started out about 1971. And because I loved the band so much, I wanted to listen to their live shows when they weren't playing live. And I wanted to listen to more than just their albums. So I started collecting these, and then you find other collectors, and you trade tapes. Okay, I've got this show, you've got this show. Let's hook up our reel-to-reels. No cassettes yet, no internet yet, all right? Mm-hmm. And we'll sit around together and just hang out and make copies. Because a copy you have to do in real time.
Mm-hmm.
One tape to another.
Yep.
And so, I got a lot of friends that way and people of mutual interest. And so when I did move to California, I had a rather large collection of concert recordings. And so I'd met other people and started to expand my reach of people of mutual interest who also wanted to collect tapes. In fact, David Gans, who is well-known as a huge Grateful Dead fan and a radio personality
and historian
and musician and author, really credits me with turning him onto his first tapes. So I started way back then, and then, the Grateful Dead wasn't the only band I was into, so I expanded that. And back then you had to... you had to work with like music magazines, so you put an ad in a music magazine in the back there. Send me your list, I'll send you mine, and you have a list of your tapes, and they have a list of theirs, and you do trades. So every couple of weeks, you get 10 cassettes in the mail of new music, live concert recordings that you never heard before, and that I always, they would list their qualities, and I would always go for the highest quality. I did not want an audience quality tape. I wanted a soundboard or an FM broadcast or something like that. And I ended up trading tapes with people in Japan, in Germany, in England, all across the U.S. And I got this large collection of live concert recordings. So, and we'll get to my photography in a minute.
Okay.
So, the question is, what do I do with these things? I just retired. I love sharing music. And so I decided, it just worked out that I was offered a show here on KPCA. It's called the Live Archive Show. It's at 5 p.m. on Fridays. And I broadcast pieces of these concert recordings. Incorporate music news of some new releases and things like that. But it's stuff that you can't hear anywhere else.
Yep, and it's an awesome show. It's on tonight, so make sure you set your alarm
at
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, 5 to 7, 2 hour show every Friday. Wow. And I play some of these live concert recordings.
I have a technical question. So when you archived it and you transferred it, I'm just curious, what bit depth and sample rate did you do it at?
I didn't go for a high bit depth.
You don't necessarily need to.
I'm
just curious what you used.
No. It's pretty basic.
So
pretty basic. 16-bit CD quality.
Yeah.
Actually, over the last 15 years or so, I've been concentrating on digitizing my tapes. I've got thousands and thousands of cassettes, reel-to-reels. I even have a DAT tapes, and I'm trying to get everything off of tape and onto a digital format. So I've been just digitizing this stuff onto my hard drive. And of course, when you digitize tapes, the cassette is, 45 minutes on one side.
Yeah.
So that's – but you have to then – break it down into songs.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can play a specific song or something like that. So it's very time consuming.
Fortunately, there's some software that helps.
Yeah,
that
there's some great software.
It'll automatically detect the silence and cut up the track.
Yeah, you can't do that necessarily with live tapes.
That's true.
Because there isn't really that silence between tracks as there would be on a commercial album.
Yeah.
So you have to manually do it, but it's actually fairly easy. You can kind of tell when the audience is applauding and when it will break to another song, and especially if you know the band's music.
But it's a long process because you have to do it in real time.
It is a long process. And when I was working, and I worked from home, I was a computer programmer for 40 years.
Oh, okay.
And I would play music while I was working. So, and all you have to do is play the music through digitize it.
Right. Exactly.
Right? So I've got a lot of my collection digitized, and I'm playing that on my show.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a fun show.
What day and time again are these?
Fridays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay. Every Friday.
Every Friday, yes. And
out.
I've got some great music queued up for tonight, so tune in. I also have, because I love all types of music, not quite all types of music.
What's the type you don't like?
You know, I've never gotten into opera.
Okay.
And I can't get into rap.
Okay.
But other than that,
but you're a country fan.
I'm not necessarily a country fan, but I don't hate it. but one form of music a genre of music that I absolutely love is jazz.
Yeah.
And so I have a jazz show on Mondays from 4 to 5, and I play. I don't play live tracks on that show. I basically play commercial recordings and pick tracks off of CDs that I like and mix them up.
Is it modern jazz or all
contemporary and classic jazz?
Okay.
I run everything from from Oscar Peterson to Dizzy Gillespie to Benny Goodman. I mean,
oh, cool.
I love it all, and so I play it all.
That's great.
And
a big jazz fan.
So tune in Mondays 4 o'clock for my jazz show called Jazz.
So you're actually at the studio on Friday and Monday.
And Monday.
Doing this.
And this morning.
Okay. So for 40 years you were a programmer. So was this like your hobby?
This was a hobby.
Okay.
Yeah, the music was a hobby. Yeah. And I still love it. I don't really do a lot of trading anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I have an enormous collection. But one thing I do is I'm a big fan, a big believer in archiving music.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 70s, I used to bring my reel-to-reel deck to some club gigs. And actually, I was studying to become a recording engineer at that point, before I became a photographer. And we'll get into that soon.
Oh, yeah.
But what I, when I was studying to become a recording engineer, one of my teachers did the sound for Jerry Garcia's offshoot bands. And even Bob Weir's band, Kingfish, Jerry Garcia. Garcia and Saunders, Olden in the Way, things like that. So I'd show up to a gig. And I'd say, can I plug my reel-to-reel into the board? And he'd say, well, ask the band. So I'd go ask Jerry, and Jerry said, sure, just give me a copy when you're done. Mm-hmm. So Jerry would let me plug into the band, to the board, and record the band. And so I have those tapes. But after a while, they started to deteriorate. Mm. And I figured if my tapes were deteriorating, then other tapes were deteriorating. Yep. And so I got involved with the Bay Area Music Archives, which was the organization put together to preserve the KSAN radio collection from the original 60s, 70s, 80s KSAN underground radio.
And which, just so the young listeners know what KSAN is?
KSAN is probably the original underground music radio station in San Francisco.
Right. KSAN.
KSAN, yeah. Sorry. And it started, I don't know the exact date, but started in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Donahue started it. It was basically a way to play album tracks that most top 40 AM radio stations weren't playing, long album tracks. And it grew to be an amazing station in San Francisco, and they ended up broadcasting live concert recordings, which is one of my passions to collect and preserve. And so I got involved. I was president of the organization in the late 90s, and we preserved a lot of those tapes that were made of the concerts they broadcast. I also, as an archivist, reach out to musicians, and I've preserved collections from Quicksilver Messenger Service guitarist John Cipollina, who's no longer with us, Jefferson Airplane drummer Spencer Dryden, a Petaluma resident who is no longer with us, Nick Gravenitis, a Sonoma County resident, a blues singer, guitarist, songwriter, his collection, and currently working on a few other collections. So not only does it give me the honor and privilege of listening to this music and you know, collecting it, but archiving it and saving it. So you'll hear some of that music on my show as well.
Are there any issues in terms of rights and royalties and all that stuff?
No.
No,
because I'm not, we're just broadcasting it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that this was looked into before I even started my show.
Okay.
Yep.
And
big topic.
Yeah, it was a big topic. Yeah. And in fact, the reason I had two shows, Jazz Show and a Live Archive Show, is because when they approached me to do a show, I came up with the Live Archive Show because of my collection of music. And they wanted to look into the rights and the legality of broadcasting this. And so I said, well, in the meantime, why don't I do a jazz show because I love jazz. And so mm-hmm. I ended up with two shows.
Huh.
So
yeah. when you're preserving your tapes, are you done with that process?
No, it's ongoing.
It's ongoing.
It's ongoing, but I'd say a large part of it is complete.
And what do you actually do to preserve them?
They're on a hard drive and backed up. And I have a backup in the safe deposit box of the bank.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And so it's off-site.
So was there any, like, something special that you found in there that is never been published music? That you happen to have in your...
Well, tune in today at 5 p.m. I've got a...
Jeez.
I've got a performance, an in-store radio performance, an in-store performance by a songwriter and a keyboardist. The songwriter's name is Dan Penn. Keyboardist's name is Spooner Oldham. And they were recorded as part of the Fame Studios out of the session musicians as part of Fame Studios out of Alabama,
mm-hmm.
And they co-wrote, for instance, "Do Right Woman, Do Right Man" by Aretha Franklin. They wrote that for her. They wrote "The Letter" by the Box Tops and "Cry Like a Baby" by the Box Tops. They did an in-store appearance at Village Music in Mill Valley, and I'm going to play some of that tonight.
Wow.
And nobody's ever heard that except for maybe the 40 or so people who were there.
Well, I will tune in at 5 when I'm driving home from Santa Rosa.
Okay.
In the traffic.
What kind of microphones were you using when you were recording events like that?
I wasn't. Because okay. I never recorded from the audience.
Oh, it was always the board.
It was always the soundboard.
Okay.
If I recorded, if I plugged my deck in, it was to the soundboard.
Okay.
I always wanted the best quality,
yeah.
the most present vocals, instrumentals, everything. At way back when, recording from the audience sounded awful. It was like yeah. listening to it in a tunnel.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you can record from the audience, and the microphones and the decks that are recorded are fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I still personally like the sound of a soundboard recording.
Well, it's a direct feed.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have all the other ambient noise. And
exactly.
when you're doing those, when you were doing those, it was always just the stereo out, so it wasn't like the multi-track.
Right.
So you couldn't remix it
right.
at home, but
right.
still.
It was stereo.
Sound out. Guy's good, so he's probably done the mixing well anyway.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great.
So when you, did you go to the Marshall Tavern and listen to music, or Lion's Share down in Marin?
I did go to the Lion's Share. I lived in Berkeley when I first moved out here, so I spent a lot of time at the Keystone Berkeley.
Uh-huh.
Went to the Lion's Share.
Uncle Charlie's.
Uncle Charlie's, yes.
We went to Winterland a lot. I lived in Winterland. Yeah, we were there like any Friday that there was a concert, we'd drive down. And I remember once there was a group of us in this van, and we drove down there, and the concert was the next night.
Yeah.
So we got to go back the next night.
It's okay. I'm sure you guys got stoned anyway.
I'm at the musicimages.com website, which is your website, and I just wanted to say that you've got a whole list of pretty big names here, including Jimi Hendrix, you've got the Grateful Dead, you already talked about them, but you've got David Bowie, you got the Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Joni Mitchell, Led Zeppelin, this is crazy. I was born too late. I missed all this stuff.
So in 1975, I picked up a camera and decided to see about, since I was going to the shows anyway, let's see about maybe taking some pictures. And one of the first gigs I went to since I was the Grateful Dead and the Jefferson Starship as a free concert in Golden Gate Park in September 28th, 1975.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought my camera, and I got there so early they ended up building the backstage fence around me.
Wow.
And I already knew members. I was friendly with Mickey Hart, the drummer from the Grateful Dead. And so I went to go up on stage, and they said, you know, what are you doing here? I said, oh, Mickey wants me to shoot. And I said, go ask him. And they said, nah, go ahead. So I parked myself on the edge of the, you know, front of the stage by Keith and Phil, and I shot there for the entire day, and those are some of my most famous photographs. I was a novice. I was kind of learning by the seat of my pants, and I did have a friend who was a photographer, professional photographer, so he taught me a few things. But when the... I must have given the Grateful Dead some pictures from that day. So when a new music magazine was starting up in the Bay Area in early 1976 called BAM, Bay Area Music Magazine, they asked the Grateful Dead for a picture because their third issue, they wanted a picture of Bob Weir for the cover, and they said, call Ed. So that was really the start. Not only was I going on my own to shoot shows, but now I had a press pass. Okay, and that and connections where BAM magazine would contact Bill Graham Presents and say, you know, we need two tickets in the third row for whatever show, and so I would go and I'd have great seats, and I'd shoot with a long lens and I'd take some amazing pictures and have an amazing time. I've shot one of my favorite weekends of photography ever was a Saturday. Well, I can't say. It was either a Friday or Saturday. Anyway, one night of the weekend was Bruce Springsteen at Winterland in 1977, I believe. 78. He played 4-hour show. Amazing show. The next night, Queen at the Oakland Coliseum with Freddie Mercury. Photogenic, oh my God. And those two nights were amazing back to back. And the, my photographs were equally, you know, amazing because I was capturing musicians that were extremely photogenic. And, yeah. And
I just saw the one of the police that you took there. Sting looks so young in that. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I did a an in-store appearance with the police at a Rather Ripped Records in Berkeley. And they were just starting out. It was 1979. They were traveling around. They pulled up in a broken-down station wagon, you know, and they were really a kind of a punk rock band. And they were playing at Zellerbach Auditorium, I think either the night before or the next night. I can't remember. So we did an in-store appearance, and I took a lot of shots of them, and that was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was also admiring this one you took of Keith Emerson, who's also not with us anymore.
No.
Neither is Greg Lake, although Carl Palmer was here last year. He performed mm-hmm. with the Mystic, and if you caught
yeah.
that. Were there any times where you were just like, ah, oh, what a drag, I got to do a photo tonight, and it's not a band I'm particularly into it, or was it always amazing and fun? And
it was really, it was always amazing and fun, and it was actually a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
Because, okay.
It's
so
a focus.
Nowadays, you've got digital cameras, you got instant gratification, you look on the back of your camera and it shows you the picture you took, you can adjust lighting and exposure and that kind of thing. Back then, you were working with film.
Yeah.
So you either knew your stuff or you got back the film after it was developed and you say, oh, I didn't shoot that right. And actually, a lot of times that happened as I was growing because I was learning as I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would develop my own film and find out myself, you know, well, it either worked or it didn't. But it was always a learning experience and, it was always fun and it was hard work because you're up there holding this very heavy 300 millimeter lens, just in up to your eye for minutes at a time to try to wait for the right expression, mm-hmm. the right, I mean, if you go to musicimages.com, one of my favorite shots is of Bob Marley. Mm-hmm. He's holding his arm up and his hand is ready to grasp almost the sun, but it's really a spotlight. And it was just a millisecond of perfect, you know, time that he did that I had to wait for and capture. And if I waited for it to happen actually and hit the shutter, it would have been gone. I had to anticipate it.
Wow. I'm looking for that photo now.
So musicimages.com,
yeah,
you can check it out.
This is great.
That's what I'm trying to figure. Okay.
So
lots of fun.
We now have my audio and my my photography world interspersed. And
yeah. Saw a good one of Frank Zappa too. That's pretty amazing. Did you get to meet some of these artists, or was it pretty much at a distance?
Most of them I did not.
Uh-huh.
One of the best times I had, since I love jazz so much, is photographing the Berklee Jazz Festival for 3 years in a row for BAM magazine.
Oh wow!
And just, you know, I had full access, on stage, backstage, dressing room, everything like that. And for the most part, those jazz musicians were a lot more relaxed and accessible than rock musicians.
That's Stanley Clark. I just saw him recently in Oakland.
Rock musicians would hide in their dressing rooms. Jazz musicians were very accessible. There were a few jazz musicians that I asked pose for me, like Jaco Pastorius, mm-hmm. bassist Jaco Pastorius, or pianist Keith Jarrett, that declined. But for the most part, everybody was very friendly and very accessible.
There's a great one of John McLaughlin here. Oh, man, so many of my guitar heroes are on your page here.
Now, tell us how you continue to benefit from having these images.
Well, I haven't shot professionally in since the mid-80s, early 80s. It was really always a hobby. so to speak. It was never a full-time gig because photography doesn't pay well, to except for the very top-tier photographers. It was always part-time, and I realized I needed to support my family. And so I took on computer programming, you know, back in 1980. So, like I said, I was doing that for 40 years. The thing is, even though I'm not shooting anymore, as you can see from my website, the photographs that I did take, a lot of those people aren't alive anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they're valuable. They're in demand.
Exactly.
And even musicians who still are alive but are celebrated, for instance, some of you may have been to the theater and have seen the new Linda Ronstadt documentary, The Sound of My Voice.
I was just looking at her.
And that was recently in the theaters. I don't know if it's in theaters anymore, but CNN Films bought that, the rights to that, and it will be broadcast live on TV for the first time on New Year's Day on CNN. Well, they're doing a lot of advertising about it, and they did a lot of advertising for the documentary, and they bought my photograph of Linda that was taken at the Greek Theater in Berkeley in her Cub Scout uniform, and that has been all over the place. In fact, I just noticed as I was watching the Democratic debate on CNN, CNN was advertising that and putting my picture up. So,
okay.
I don't get paid every time they put the picture up.
You don't?
No.
They did also purchase that photo for use in the DVD, which is being released. So that'll be on the cover of the DVD and the Blu-ray.
Huh.
So that was a nice one. I'm also working on a documentary of John Belushi.
Oh, how cool!
Which is being done with his wife's permission, and so that's going to come out in 2020.
It's a great picture of Joe Zawinul and Jaco Pastorius here.
That's one of the ones I was talking about. Awesome. The Berklee Jazz Festival.
He's of course no longer with us. It was very tragic the way he died. I'm amazed. I mean, I don't know what to say here. This is just...
It was fun.
any of you have ever been to the studios of KPCA or Petaluma Community Access, you can see we have some of Ed's photographs hanging on our walls.
That's where I realize all the photographs have come from.
Yeah.
I mean, you sell prints of these? Are you able to do that?
You can do that through my website.
So is the one of Freddie Mercury...
The one of Freddie Mercury in the front room is mine, and the one right here of The Last Waltz is mine. I was hired by BAM Magazine. I worked for BAM Magazine, so they asked me to photograph The Last Waltz with, well, everybody knows about The Last Waltz. That was the band's final performance. It was at Winterland on Thanksgiving in 1976, and Bill Graham, being the amazing promoter that he is, put out a full spread, a full Thanksgiving dinner for the audience. And for those who didn't eat turkey, I think it was Bob Dylan who flew in Nova Scotia salmon. And so they fed us, and they had an orchestra playing waltz music so people can dance the waltz beforehand. And then as people were done eating, they'd take the tables away. And finally, the show happened, and of course, you know, Bob Dylan, the band, Joni Mitchell, Van Morrison, Ringo Starr, everybody. I was down front taking pictures, as many photographers, including Annie Leibovitz, was down front taking pictures. And when everybody came out for the encore, I said, I've got to have a full picture of the stage. So I ran up to the left side balcony where in the first row my cousin was sitting, and I squeezed myself in to where he was sitting, and I took pictures of the entire stage, which a lot of the other photographers didn't get to do. So
I have to ask about this one of Pete Townsend jumping in the air. Was this a one take thing, or did you have to do several attempts to get the right timing on that?
Well, I did many attempts to get him, but every time he's about to jump, you I mean, you know, you've got to be ready for
yeah.
Pete Townsend. He's going to jump in the air. He's and that was at a at the Oakland Coliseum, Oakland yeah. Stadium, when they when the Dead and the Who played.
I was 9 years
in
old.
1976.
Thanks for reminding us.
No, I'm bummed because if I'd been older, I would have been at the concert.
Yeah.
Of course, then I'd be older now. Oh, shit.
Oh, wow. That's okay. Huh. You also were at a lot of the Day on the Green concerts.
Yes, that one Jason, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We just met. The one Jason is looking at with the Who was a Day on the Green. Yeah. So I photographed a lot of the Days on the Green for Bill Graham. And one of my, probably my biggest sellers is Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And I've had, I have a picture in, I think it's of Robert Plant in the new book that just came out. The coffee table book came out about a year ago called Led Zeppelin by Led Zeppelin. And the band actually picked the photos that are going into the book. And so they did choose one of mine. And
that's great.
A few years before that, Jimmy Page did his own book of photographs, and I've got a couple in there. So I usually, if there's a Led Zeppelin book, they use my photos.
Oh, this is great with Jimmy Page, and he's got the violin bow about to. I guess maybe he's just drawn it off of his guitar. It's amazing.
It was a fun day. The Days on the Green were a lot of fun as long as I was allowed either on stage or in the pit in front of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
There were some shows that I wasn't. But the ones that I was on stage for Sammy Hagar, and I was on stage for Eddie Money, and I have pictures of them. I'm like just off the stage, and I have pictures of them on the edge of the stage with the entire audience in the background, and that really gave a good context to their show. And usually there's. I think before Eddie Money passed away, there was a Dan Rather has a show on that he where he interviews musicians.
He's great. I heard
he's fantastic.
And he
interviewed Eddie Money, and sure enough, they used that photo that I took on that show. So
they had to ask you permission for it, or you?
No, I'm represented by Getty Images.
Oh, okay.
And they're the largest image bank in the world, and usually anybody who's looking for pictures goes to Getty.
So how does that actually work? Because, you know, I'll always see Getty Images at the bottom.
You have to go
there
and buy
they
it.
Have my photos, and people go there, and they look for specific uses. They pay per that use.
Okay.
So they might want it just to put online, mm-hmm. or they might want it for, say, a promotional poster for Linda Ronstadt that's going to go all over the world.
Right.
So, in fact, the Linda Ronstadt one, they actually went back, I think there's 4 or 5 times to ask for different usage and pay for each use. Mm-hmm. You know, there was the promotional poster, there was online use, there was the DVD.
That you're getting paid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
And since I haven't been doing this since 1983, as far as shooting regularly, I don't have all those contacts and associations. And so really people don't know me. They wouldn't know to come to me to look for the photograph.
Right.
So that's why Getty Images is great, because I just sit back and let them do the work.
So how do you actually connect with them? Getty Images, put your images there. I mean, do you contact them? And
I have a contract with them.
It is.
That they represent my photography. And one of the things that I do periodically, I mean, I have to scan in my negatives and slides and digitize those too. So I'm digitizing audio and I'm digitizing film. And so then I upload that to them with the information, and they put it on their website. And I'm still going through my archives of photography of thousands of rolls of negatives and slides and coming up with new stuff. In fact, Cindy, you'll be happy to know that I recently went through my 1981 Greek Theater Grateful Dead show and came up with some amazing stuff.
Nice.
So that, those are going up soon.
That's cool.
Great.
So I keep busy.
Yeah, you keep busy, yeah, but you retired good. From your IT job was last June, was it?
Last April. Yeah.
April, yeah.
Yeah, I retired.
Do you feel retired?
Yes.
Do you feel retired?
I feel retired because I can wake up when I want to, and mm-hmm. I can set my day however I want to. I can basically say, okay, I want to do this now, or I want to do that now. You know, I really rotate between photography, music, and you know other things in my life, and I just round robin the whole thing. And mm-hmm. but I can do it when I want to, and how long I want to, and that's the part of retirement that I enjoy.
Given you have more time and flexibility, have you considered learning an instrument? Do you have any passion for that at all?
I'm not as coordinated as most musicians should be. Uh-huh. So I don't think
there's always ukulele.
Yes. You know, interestingly,
new up and coming.
Interestingly enough, with my love of jazz and rock music, I've always thought about playing the cello.
Oh, cool! Oh, wow. Cello is a beautiful instrument.
I love the sound.
Not easy to play.
Yeah. So, but no, it's not going to happen in my lifetime.
You never know.
No.
And then the other question I had was, since you're a programmer and you're so experienced in archiving, had you ever considered developing some archiving software that would, you know, help that process? Obviously, you've worked with things that are out there. You've probably run into pitfalls. You probably have ideas to make it better. Just curious. Yeah.
That's
I work in the music software
question.
Business. That's what I ask.
That would be work.
I know.
Digitizing all your files is a lot of work.
Well,
that's
it is.
Work in itself.
It is a lot of work. One of the things I have to do when I digitize my negatives and slides mm-hmm. is I have to spot them for dust and scratches mm-hmm. because I'm very picky. Not only am I picky in my music as far as the quality, but I'm picky in my photography. I won't want to put any photograph out there that has dust spots or scratches or anything like that was on the negative. Mm-hmm. So wonderful software like Photoshop helps me take care of that. But it's time-consuming and it's meticulous work.
Yeah.
But that's the legacy I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave quality stuff.
Where do you store all these hard copies
exactly.
of your negatives and your tapes?
Where do I store them?
You keep them at home?
Yes.
Wow, you must have one room dedicated to all this?
No, it's, negatives and slides don't take up a lot of room. Pictures themselves would.
Yeah.
But I don't have a lot of pictures.
But the audio tapes.
The audio tapes that take up a lot of room. When we bought a new house in Petaluma 11 years ago, and it was bigger than the one we had, and I took the boxes of reel-to-reel tapes, and I put them in this room, this little Harry Potter closet under the stairs, you
mm-hmm.
know, and they haven't been touched since then. And it was mm-hmm. like, okay, when I retire, I'll get to that, but I haven't yet, so.
Do you ever worry because, you know, we have fires, or, you know, in case something happens?
Of course I worry.
You know, because you said that you put, you store stuff in a safe deposit box.
Yes, my digital file.
Right. But
absolutely,
photos, yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
I worry. In fact, there were a few times when the recent fires were getting too close for comfort, we basically, I had my negatives and slides and my hard drives and everything ready.
Wow!
I had them ready. I had them boxed up. We were ready to go, but I would have still lost a lot of stuff. There's only so much you can do.
Right.
There's
right.
really only so much you can do. So I live in an area that is not susceptible to power outages, fortunately. Mm-hmm. It's a little area that, you know, that isn't doesn't get the power outages, and it's not really that susceptible to the fires.
I'm thinking more just in case there was a home fire or something.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's not much I can do. I just have to hope it doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah.
And that you archive everything in time.
Yeah.
It does.
But I've been busy.
Yeah. Because it would it would devastate me to lose that stuff, being the archivist that I am, and those negatives and slides are, you know, they're part of me. They're my children.
Well, you know, Pelham has a lot of very talented people.
Yep, that's why we had Eddie.
Exactly. I mean, it's just every time you meet somebody new, it always amazes me. Yeah. And it's whether you've been here a long time or, you know, just coming here, it's exciting to see.
It's a magnet.
Yeah. No, it really is.
It's a great town.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I want to thank you, Ed, for being here today. For listeners, we've been talking with Ed Perlstein today. Ed is a music photographer, and more importantly, today he is a radio programmer right here at KPCA. And tonight you can hear him from 5 to 7 for the Live Archives show. And on Mondays from 4 to 5 for Jazz.
Yep. Yes. So tune in.
Very exciting.
Thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Okay, so it's about time for us to wrap up.
I will announce one thing, that Michelle Obama is going to be in Sacramento on April 1st.
Wow.
And I found out this yesterday, and so I wanted to get tickets and ask somebody if I could get tickets from them. Mm-hmm. I couldn't, but you can get pre-sale tickets. And the word was Michelle. And so I got my tickets yesterday, and they went on sale today. Yeah.
How many tickets did you get?
I bought 4 tickets because I thought I'd take 2 of my granddaughters.
That's cool.
Who else are you taking?
Well,
all right. So
I'm trying to figure out how I can be the photographer or press pass.
Coming in at noon is Jordan Torres with his Brown Boy Talking Show. And I want to thank everybody for listening. You've been listening to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, here with my co-hosts, Jason Davies and Dennis Peter Thompson. Thank you guys for sticking with me. And I hope you stick with it next year. I think everybody wants Inside Petaluma to stay alive.
I can feel my heart beating, so that's a good sign.
Good. All right, everybody. Oh, InsidePetaluma.com is the website for the archives, and KPCA, Inside Petaluma, is our Facebook page. Go check it out.
See you next week.
Happy weekend, everyone. And happy holidays.
Yes.